Hey guys, and welcome to the Money Podcast. You know, I started working as a stockbroker, aka investment advisor, back in the summer of 1981. Now, guess what mortgage rates were back then? Today, they're around 3%. You know what they were in 1981? As high as 18%. And savings rates? Well, today you can't earn squat at the bank, right? But believe it or not, in 1981, you could earn 17% in a money market account. Now imagine me trying to sell stocks to people when they could earn 17% virtually risk-free. It was no walk in the park, especially since the stock market was terrible. At the end of 1981, the Dow Jones Industrial Average, the one that's now at 33,000, was at 875, guys. 875. Why were stocks so low? Because interest rates were so high. And why were rates so high? In a word, inflation, otherwise known as rising prices. Now, inflation can eat your investments for lunch, which is something a lot of people don't know since it hasn't been much of a factor for decades now. But these days, there's a lot of talk on inflation, isn't there? Is it going to happen? What's it going to do to your investments? What can you do to protect yourself? That's what we're going to find out in today's podcast. I'm your host, Stacy Johnson, and this podcast is brought to you by MoneyTalksNews.com, serving up the best in personal finance news and advice since 1991. As usual, my co-host will be financial journalist Miranda Marquette. Listening in and sometimes contributing is producer and novice investor Aaron Freeman. Hey, guys.
Heyo.
Hey.
Well, are you ready for this topic?
Let's do this.
I think this is going to be really kind of a fun topic. But before we go on, though, let me throw in a quick disclaimer. Don't take anything you hear on this podcast as investment advice, because it isn't. If you've got questions, do your own research, get your own advice, make your own decisions. Capiche? Okay, let's get back to the topic at hand. I want to give you a quick background on what we're going to talk about today, guys. What is inflation? Where does it come from? Why has it been low for so long? Why does it hurt stock prices? Is it coming back? How bad could it get? And how should you be investing to protect your portfolio or your savings from inflation? Think we can answer all those things in half an hour?
All right, master of fiscal responsibility. Let's get to it.
Quick definition of inflation. Anybody want to tackle that?
I mean, at the most basic level, it's prices, right? Rise in prices slash it could also be considered a decrease in spending power.
Yeah. So, yeah, and you're absolutely right. That's what I would say. Inflation is a decline of spending power. So, in other words, dollars aren't worth as much. You need more of them to buy something. That's what rising prices really is, right? There's two types of inflation. See if you can figure this out, Aaron. There's demand pull and cost push.
Demand pull and
so
cost
what would demand
push.
Pull inflation be?
This is where products are in high demand. People are buying products.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, like, in fact, we may be in this environment soon. There's a lot of demand. So imagine everybody wants to go out and spend their money that they haven't been spending the last year because they've been in their house. And there's only so much supply of something. You know, we all want to go on a helicopter ride, but there's not that many helicopters. So what's going to happen? Prices are going to go up. Helicopter pilots are going to charge more for rides. That came to my head because I'm about to take a helicopter ride. My wife gave me one for Christmas. Now, that's demand pull. Okay, so what's cost push
going
to be?
So when all the prices are going up, up, and up, so people start saving and waiting for the prices to go back down?
There's inflation hitting the cost of the helicopter fuel. Right. So that guy has to charge more because his materials, his supplies cost more. So that's cost push. Cost higher cost or pushing prices higher. Demand pull is more demand, static supply equals higher prices. Both inflation. Okay.
Now I thought there was like a gazillion different inflations. Like I was reading that there's inflation, there's core inflation, there's stagflation, there's hyperinflation.
Well, they're different. Oh, good. I was just going to say, these are different ways to measure inflation, right? So people say, okay, well, you're looking at core CPI, right? Core producer cost.
Consumer price index.
Consumer price index, sorry. So you're looking at like core inflation. You're looking at that consumer price index, and that's a different, those are ways to measure inflation, right? Hyperinflation is a way to measure quick fast shooting up their inflation, right? So there's a lot of different ways people measure inflation, which also makes this very interesting, because it's like, okay, so there are different ways to measure inflation. So then you end up with different numbers, right? Because if you're doing...
Right. So I was reading, like, the core inflation is basically what the Fed looks at, which is basically not looking at, what is it, energy and
that's
food
right.
prices, because they fluctuate crazy month to month rather than over time.
Yes, that's correct. Because they're so
volatile.
So
now we're talking about how this... Yeah, right, exactly. So now we're talking about this in terms of how do we invest or look at our retirement in inflation. Should we also be looking at core inflation? Or are you
sure.
talking about just inflation in general?
Yeah,
I think
we should be looking at core inflation, Aaron. And by the way, before we leave this topic too, stagflation is something that happened in the 1970s, which I also remember. That was stagnant economy. In other words, the economy is not growing and inflation. Horrible scenario. So you've got your prices are going up, but your economy sucks. You know, and what's interesting too, guys, what you could try to do when you've got a few minutes and you're really super bored, look up the CPI and what the components of the CPI are. Obviously, we can't measure every single thing in the economy. So what the federal government does is they go out and they take a basket of consumer goods and they measure the price increases or decreases on that on this basket of goods individually. And then they combine it all together into the CPI or the consumer price index. But it's interesting if you look at what the actual basket is, because it's pretty fascinating stuff. And when I've written in books before about the inflation is interesting because it affects people so differently. If you're going to college, boy, the cost of college or health, or if you need health care, these costs are exceeding they're exceeding inflation by a wide margin. If you don't need those two things though, then you may not. Okay, here's another example. A lot of the CPI is made up of housing prices. Well, if you're a renter and rent's going up, that means a lot to you. But if you own your home, that inflation is good for you. It's making your house worth more. So if you want to take a better or closer look at inflation, I encourage you to do so by looking at the components of the CPI, and then you can kind of come up with your own personal consumer price index and see if inflation's good, bad, or indifferent to you. Anyway, I digressed. Let's keep going because we have a lot of questions to answer.
And in our show notes, I don't know if you guys know this, but I put some really cool links. There's a website out there called The Balance.
Yep.
And it kind of just gives you these nuts and bolts of everything. And I put those links in the show notes.
I see the links now. Where does inflation come from, guys? What is it?
Teacher. I know. I think it's the GDP, the gross domestic product.
Well, it's actually just an increase in the supply of money. I mean, think about it. You know, if there's $500,000 in the world, and then all of a sudden there's $1 million in the world, well, those dollars are only worth half as much. You have to have twice as many to buy the same thing. And that's all that.
So kind of like what's happening in like other countries, whatever. They get hyperinflation because they're just printing money like
yes,
crazy.
Yes, and actually, that not just in other countries. That's what's happening now here. Because
Except we've managed to avoid hyperinflation. So
we have. and some people are curious as to how. And we'll talk some more about that. But basically, what we have done is, okay, when COVID hit, the Fed was authorized to lend up to $2.3 trillion. You know how much money that is? I read this. $2.3 trillion. If you put $1 bills on top of each other, that would reach halfway to the moon. The stack of dollar bills would be 120,000 miles high. That's how much $2.3 trillion. So anyway, the Fed's authorized to lend up to that. Now, here's how money is actually created. People imagine when they say they're printing money, people imagine there's literally a printing press and they're printing money. Well, there is a printing press and money is being printed by the Treasury Department, but that's not how the Fed actually creates money, though. What they actually do is they buy bonds. This is called open market operations. They'll go out and they'll buy a government bond from a bank. Let's say the bank has $1 billion of government bonds. They'll go in there and they will credit that bank. They'll buy that bond. They'll credit that bank with $1 billion cash. And how'd they do that? With a key swipe. Right? Because they're the government. They just said, okay, now you've got $1 billion in your bank. And what that bank does with that $1 billion is they're encouraged to lend. And the more the Fed does that, they could do the same thing in reverse too. They could sell bonds and get a bunch of the currency out of circulation. But what they want to do, and when times are bad, is they want to put currency in circulation to drive down interest rates, which encourages economic activity. So they literally create money out of thin air. They don't do it with a printing press, but they do it with a keystroke.
All right. Is that also called the federal fund rate, or is that something else?
The Fed funds rate is the rate at which banks borrow from one another. There's also the discount rate, which is where banks borrow from the Fed. But so
because everything I read, that seems like that was another key thing that seems to
these are interest rates that the Federal Reserve can control. What were you going to say?
I was just going to say the same thing. It's what the Fed can control. So basically, if money is circulating in a way that, because part of another reason that we end up with inflation, right, is if we have a lot of borrowing in, you know, from consumers, right? If consumers are borrowing a lot in the economy and borrowing money and circulating money at a much higher rate, that can also lead to rising prices and inflation. And so one of the ways that the Fed kind of tries to keep a lid on inflation is to raise interest rates to make it more expensive to borrow money.
Right. So essentially, one of them is putting their foot on the gas. If you put more money into the economy by allowing banks to loan more and by keeping interest rates low, that encourages economic activity. That's like pushing on an accelerator. If you raise interest rates and make it more expensive to borrow money, that's like putting on the brakes. Remember when I was telling you at the start of this podcast, when I became a stockbroker in 1981, mortgage rates were 18%. Can you imagine what the monthly payment is on a house? So this is really going to slow down economic activity. That's what the Fed does. They're using this, and they have two goals: to keep inflation at bay and to make as many people or help as many people as possible get jobs. So in other words, they want to stimulate the economy when it needs it, and they want to keep inflation from rearing its ugly head. That is their mandate. Now let's move on. Next question. Is inflation bad? What do you think, Aaron?
I would say maybe no.
It's not super. Right. I mean, inflation and it's adaptive, right? Inflation is something that we adapt to, something that we expect. Now, too much inflation too fast can be a problem.
Huge problem.
Yeah. And if we have continued inflation with other parts of the economy remaining stagnant, like wages. So for instance, if, say, I don't know, our wages haven't kept up with the rate of inflation, it gets harder for people to buy things. So for instance, right, the federal minimum wage remains at $7.25 per hour. If the federal minimum wage had kept with the pace of inflation, minimum wage would actually be closer to like $22 to $23 per hour. So wages have not kept pace with inflation. Even in a lot of places where they've raised the minimum wage, it hasn't kept pace with inflation and it hasn't kept pace with rates. So that's one way, just even small amounts of inflation that we expect in our economy can accumulate over time to cause problems.
Yep. And we're going to discuss that in a minute when we answer why has inflation been so low for so long. But to the question, is inflation bad? Inflation's not bad unless it gets runaway, unless it's too high like it was in 1981. A couple of points of inflation, and that, by the way, is the Fed's goal, to have 2% inflation. That's fine. And the reason why it's fine, it's really kind of because you don't want deflation, because deflation's horrible. They were having that. They had that in Japan. Now, deflation, Aaron, was what? Would be just what? Prices falling, right?
Right.
Okay. And why is that bad?
Offhand, I don't know.
Because I think about if wages and prices are falling, why should I buy a car if it's going to be cheaper tomorrow?
Oh,
right?
Okay.
So that's horrible for the economy. That's what you want to avoid at all costs. How do you avoid deflation? Have a little bit of inflation.
Does that lead to depression?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's usually a sign of economic inactivity, deflation. So you really don't want that at all. And you certainly don't want falling wages either, obviously. How'd you guys like that? Little Miss Throat Clearer over there.
Well, how would that come about? I mean, that would mean you're talking about like a global scale, everybody deciding we don't need as much stuff as we're buying.
Yeah, well, that makes sense. And actually, we're going to talk about inflation, what's going to happen to our inflation in the coming weeks, because it's going to look like the opposite of that. Because remember, I'll cover this again, but remember that last year, nobody was doing anything, right? And so this spring, if you're going to compare prices to where they were last spring, it's going to give you an artificially screaming inflation rate.
Right.
Women's dresses, example, up 18% over last year. Why? Because they couldn't give away women's dresses last year because no women could go to the store to buy them.
Right, so there were no events to wear them at.
Yeah, there you go. So, and you're going to see, obviously, spread this throughout the entire economy, because not only have prices gone up, but they went down last year. They deflated because they couldn't get rid of stuff.
Right, which is why they call it a K-shaped recovery, because certain businesses did really, really well, and then certain businesses just disappeared.
And actually, it really refers to people getting richer.
Yeah, I was going to say, the K-shaped recovery actually refers to people in the top income brackets actually recovered very well from the COVID and the, you know, short-term economic impacts, and people on the bottom end of the socioeconomic scale are still struggling. And so that's what that kind of K-shaped recovery refers to, is the fact that we still have problems at that bottom scale of the socioeconomic recovery, because they're just not recovering as well. They don't have, like, these are folks that don't have white-collar jobs where they can, like, work from home and still earn money.
Yeah, and actually, and this is a good segue too, because talking about deflation, because the next question on my list is, how has inflation been so low for so long? Now, we just said that the Federal Reserve is creating money, and they're doing it big time. $2.3 trillion they have permission to do. And they're spending, I forgot how much it is, $170 billion a month they're putting into the economy. This is money they're creating out of thin air. So if we know that inflation literally is more and more money supply, and we know more and more money is being created, then how come inflation isn't bad? How come it isn't going up? And this is kind of a tricky question. You want to hazard a guess on that one?
Well, looking at charts, I can see that the Fed rate was pretty high back in 1988, and then it's continuously gone down.
Yes, because the Fed's trying to stimulate the economy.
Right, and then after that, it's kind of stayed at a steady average 2% every since then.
Right. Yeah. So.
Yeah. Less than.
Right.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, well, part of what the Fed likes to do, and part of what whoever is ostensibly in charge of the government likes to do, is try and limit our economic crashes and try and keep things going and try and keep the stock market from crashing and scaring everybody. And so what ends up happening is, you know, we get a lot of low interest rates. And so far, the way our economic activity has responded and the way things have gone, continuing to do that, pumping money into the economy, so far has not caught up to us. But, you know, there are concerns that the fact that since the 1980s, and since there is, you know, this obsession with, you know, whoever's running the government, you know, they want to avoid having a crash on their watch. So this obsession with trying to, like, do everything they can to prop everything up and kind of move beyond cyclical economics might eventually catch up with us, and we could see a huge crash at some point.
That was a big factor after that, global trade.
Yes. Yes. I was going to tell you some reasons why inflation is, because we haven't had material inflation. I told you my story from 1981. That's 40 years ago. That's a long time ago. Inflation's been pretty low for, God, at least 20 years.
Well, yeah. Right? Just about my entire life, honestly.
It's been low for a long time. So, and if we're printing more money, what's keeping prices lower? I got a quote from Alan Greenspan. He was chairman of the Fed Reserve. He's not anymore. He used to be. And this is a quote. Okay. And see if you can decipher this, because this guy talks in, you know, he uses big words. But anyway, the past decade of low inflation and solid economic growth in the United States and in many other countries around the world is attributable to the remarkable confluence of innovations that spawned new computerized technology. So in other words, technological advancement has brought down the price of goods that use technologies. Think robots, guys. I mean, there used to be 6,000 people in a GM plant. Now there's 600. Now that sucks if you're one of those people who got laid off, but it makes cars cheaper. So technology can make things less expensive. Also, think about this. I just learned this morning. It's interesting. The sharing economy. Now this is utilizing otherwise idle goods and services, which leads to a reduction in prices. Now think about this, okay? Think about Airbnb and Uber. Utilizing otherwise idle goods and services, which leads to reductions in prices. That car used to be sitting in your driveway. Now it's moving people around, putting competition on taxis. That house used to just be your house, your vacation home. Now it's being used as a hotel room, and it's causing prices of surrounding hotels to go down. So these are things that have kept inflation at bay. Also, globalization, which Aaron just mentioned, cheaper labor, cheaper goods. That also is going to reduce prices. So that's what's kept down these things, and other things have kept down inflation over the last 20, 30 years.
That's interesting.
It is interesting. Let's take a quick commercial break, guys. We will be right back after this. Don't go anywhere. Okay, we're back. And now let's get to the real meat. Let's get to the reason we're all here to talk about. What are we supposed to do about all this stuff? What's it going to do to our investments? Does inflation hurt stock prices? Do you want to take a stab at that?
Nope, Miranda, you got it.
So in general, the stock market doesn't like inflation because inflation prompts the Fed to raise interest rates, which means it makes it more expensive to borrow money, which means if you're a business, and most of these businesses, a lot of people don't realize borrowing money is a regular part of most businesses, especially large businesses. And so that's going to cut, right? That's going to cut into your profitability when you have to pay more to borrow money. And so that's part of,
absolutely.
Yeah, that's part of the reasons why stock markets don't really care for inflation, because it means that the Fed's going to, you know, rates are going to go higher to kind of keep a lid on it. And that can be a problem. And then also, once again, when inflation starts to go up and people don't have the money in their pockets, and their spending power isn't as good, well, they're not spending money. And they're not buying the goods and services that help these companies remain profitable.
Well done. Great explanation. And you know, one more thing, and everything you said is absolutely right, and that was on my list of things to say, but the also companies may have to pay more for supplies, and they may be reluctant to pass those increased expenses along to their customers, especially at first. That's going to decrease their profitability. That's going to show up in a lower stock price. So all this stuff, and also remember too, as interest rates go up, remember my example too, when I became a stockbroker, money market's paying 17%. You want to buy a stock when you can keep your money in the bank and earn 17%? Hell no. So, the higher rates are really bad for stocks, and higher rates are almost always a side effect of inflation. So, but that's not always true. In general, there are some stocks that are going to do better with inflation. We're going to go over a couple of examples in a minute. But stocks traditionally have been an inflation hedge. They have kept up with inflation. They've outperformed inflation as a whole over time. So maybe that may be a little confusing, but over time, stocks are a good inflation hedge. Now, let's get back to what's really going on. Let's step out of the classroom and into real life. Is inflation coming back right now?
According to everything I've read, I don't know.
I don't know that we're going to see huge inflation. I mean, like we were talking about earlier, we are probably going to see a huge uptick in like just the sheer numbers, right? Statistically speaking, when you compare what it's going to look like right now to what it looked like last year, it's going to look a little bit scarier than it probably is. But I don't think we're going to see some immediate inflationary impacts that are going to take us above that 2% target anytime in the very near future. We don't know what's going to happen a couple years out from now, but I think right now in the very near future, there are enough other things going on that's probably going to keep it under wraps for at least a little bit longer.
I agree with you. I think that's true. I mean, and by the way, none of us know. I mean, it could get bad. Because, you know, one of the things that can make inflation bad is people being afraid of inflation. It could be a self-fulfilling prophecy. But the key thing for an investor to hear in this podcast is this: it's going to look bad. It's going to look inflationary, and you're going to get freaked out by it. And the media is going to publicize this to freak you out by it. But it may not be that big of a deal. As we said, last year to this year is not a fair comparison because there was literally deflation last year. So it's going to look like prices are screaming higher. And also there's going to be some demand pull inflation. We've all got, we've saved, I forgot what it is. Oh, here's a statistic for you. JP Morgan just the other day announced their savings balances, their savings accounts, has grown 37% since year.
Wow.
Now, this is one bank, guys, $582 billion more in their savings account this year than last year. That's a lot of money, and it's going to be looking for a home. So there's going to be demand pull inflation. There's obviously going to be year-to-year comparisons that are going to make things look terrible. So be aware of that. And it, and if you're willing to, if you're looking to accumulate more stocks, this may be, it may present a great buying opportunity, because when the market starts freaking out about these bad numbers, inflation numbers, there's likely to be a correction. And if the, and if you want to buy more stocks, that might be a good time to do it. If, that is, you believe inflation will settle down, which seems to be the consistent consistent things that I'm reading. But again, this is all guessing. Inflation could rear its ugly head and stay that way for years.
All right, you have to clarify a little bit. I don't understand how this bank having a boatload of billions is beneficial to our stocks and my buying power and,
well,
and whatever.
Well, it's just showing you that there's a lot of pent-up demand, Aaron. So when everyone couldn't, they couldn't spend money.
So I mean, so you're basically saying this bank has a lot of money for to loan
now,
out?
What I mean is those people who have that money in savings accounts may just start pulling it out when they're able to go on a cruise or go to a restaurant or go in a plane or go to Hawaii. You know what I'm saying? So
I'm sorry. So you're saying that J.P. Morgan at savings accounts as a whole for all a cumulative of all the people
yes,
that bank
yes.
with J.P. Morgan.
You thought I was talking about J.P. Morgan, the company.
Oh, yeah. No.
As a corporation has $500 billion just sitting around
that.
Waiting to loan out to people. I was like, what
just,
are you talking about?
I was just
about?
Demonstrating an example of how much money is lying there waiting for people to spend it of their own savings.
Okay. Gotcha. Yes. There are many reports that there's been a major increase in savings during COVID.
Right.
People just not spending money.
And since we're Americans and we like to spend money, we're liable to take some of that money out of J.P. Morgan and hand it to a travel agent or somebody pretty soon. So that's kind of it's going to mean some demand pull inflation numbers, and it may look scary, and it may be scary, you know. But what from what I'm reading. The consensus seems to be.
I've read about four different articles saying the same thing that you're saying right now, and all of them said the same thing. The only thing that would throw off this expansion, the only thing would be another or a COVID outbreak of some other sort that would throw everything out
yes.
of balance.
Yes.
So a few other countries getting scared of their other variant and closing up every shop, and that would throw a monkey wrench
yes.
into the works. Other than that, everybody's saying this is going to be great.
Yeah. And we're going to talk more. Now, you know, every Friday, we talk about the stock market and investments in general and interest rates and all that sort of thing, and we get specific. So if you're listening to this podcast, listen to every Friday, because we do all the money news you need to know, and we'll talk about some specific investments then. But before we leave, we've got one more thing we've got to do. How do you protect yourself investing-wise against inflation? What do you do?
Invest in stocks. Be an indexer. Like, it just be boring.
Oh my god.
Yeah, you just said that overall the stock market has always outpaced inflation. It's always done well over, you know, 40 years.
That is true.
But let's say you're close to retirement. Let's like right now, like you're 65?
65.
You're looking at this, you've got a boatload of money in stocks.
Boatload.
What are you thinking about right now? Thinking, are you pulling your money out? What are you doing?
One thing I'm doing is actually, I'm not doing this because I don't have a lot of this, but if you should be taking profits on your most speculative investments. Rising interest rates hurt growth stocks the most, okay? So in other words, I own a bunch of Apple. I'm not taking money out of Apple. But if I own Tesla, I might be doing that. If I've got a stock that's gone up 800% in the last 2 years, I'm going to ring the register. Because if inflation does rear its ugly head, then the stocks with the most speculative stocks, that bubble's going to burst. Okay, so I'm going to bring in my risk portfolio a little bit. So I don't want as many risky things. And if you want to get stocks that are going to do best during inflation, because I said overall stocks are a good inflation hedge, but there are some stocks that are way better than others. Guess what those would be? Consumer staples. And what's a consumer staple? Pretty much what you can imagine. It's stuff that you're going to buy. And they can pass any price increases along to you. Think Nestle, Costco, Coca-Cola, Estee Lauder. These are companies you're going to continue to shop with no matter what prices are, and they can quickly, if their supplies go up in price, they can quickly pass those price increases along to you. So those stocks can benefit even from inflation. Consumer staples. Want to know more about that? Put consumer staple stocks into Google and hit send, and you'll get a list of them.
So you're saying pull out of your risky funds, and then if there is a contraction and then everything dips down, then buy more of those things.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. Now, me personally, as you know, I'm not a trader. So I'm not really going to do a whole bunch in my portfolio. But I'm just telling you, if you are going to use these corrections as a place to get into the stock market, and you think you're concerned about inflation, look at consumer staples. And there's some good companies. And you'll even find some that pay good dividends, too. So other things you can do to protect yourself against inflation. Gold has been a historical hedge against inflation. You can either buy bullion. You can buy an ETF that holds bullion. You can buy mining stocks. Gold hasn't been doing a whole bunch so far this year, much to my chagrin, because I bought a gold mining stock earlier this year, and I'm down on it now. But anyway, another thing you can do, tangible assets. Real estate traditionally does well during rising inflation. Think about if you own rental property. What do you do when inflation hits? You raise your rent, right? So that's why it's a good inflation hedge. Oil has traditionally done well in inflation because they can easily pass price increases along. Also, check out inflation index bonds. They're called TIPS, Treasury Inflation Protected Securities, TIPS. Put that in a search engine. And you'll find out everything you want to know. Or you can go to, what is it, treasury.gov, right?
Treasury Direct. .gov.
Treasury Direct.
Yeah, if you want to go to treasurydirect.gov, and you can buy them directly, and can be a great way to protect your income, right? Your income bearing investments from inflation, and is great for as you start shifting your, you know, from a growth phase in your portfolio to an income phase. They can be a great way to do that.
Good. And also, and speaking of bonds, you can also shorten your bond maturities. We were talking to Roger Whitney last week, wasn't it, about what to do with when you can't earn as much. The bonds don't pay very well. But the longer the bond, the more it's going to go down in value as interest rates go up. If you've got a very long-term bond, now I'm not talking about a mutual fund, but like let's say a treasury bond, if interest rates go up 1%, it falls 8% in value. So you want to shorten your maturities. The shorter the maturity of that bond, the sooner it's coming due, the less it pays, but the less risk there is from inflation or higher interest rates. Make sense?
To me, no. But to everybody else, probably.
No, why not?
I don't know. It just, it's all crazy. Is everybody saying inflation, just because we haven't had any in a long time? I mean, since the 90s, I mean, it's been flat. I mean, they're still predicting the core inflation rate is going to be like 2% at 2023, providing that there's no COVID problems. Yeah. So you're saying like the only reason why you'd be worried about this, people's mindset, you hear it in the news so much that people think it's going to happen. So then they bring the prophecy to reality?
No, there is some factual basis to this. I mean, the 10-year bond was paying 0.5% last year at this time. Now it's paying 1.65. Now, granted, 1.65 is still dirt cheap interest rates, but it's also tripled since last year. So that's what, you know, that gets people looking at it. You know, they make them nervous because what if it keeps going? You know, that's why you're seeing inflation in the news so much now. And the consensus does seem to be that this is going to be a temporary blip. But, you know, and there's another thing, too, that you forget, Aaron, that a lot of times people don't see this stuff. In other words, they're wrong. I don't know if you remember what happened in 2009, but there weren't a whole bunch of people saying the market was going to crash and my house was going to go down, down in value by 50%.
Right. Everything is hindsight.
And that's exactly what the hell happened.
Right. Right. Happened with the tech bubble, happened with a lot of different things.
Yeah, I mean everything looks simple until it isn't.
Right.
So that's why we discuss these things. But and we say what the consensus is, but the consensus has been wrong plenty of times in my 40-year career. I'll tell you that. Okay, guys, I'm afraid we're out of time, but we're never out of topic. And this is a complicated topic, so I want you to dig deeper so you can understand it better. You're going to find links to lots more info in our show notes. And remember, if your goal is to make more, to spend less, to retire rich, your online home is MoneyTalksNews.com. And don't forget to check out Miranda's online home as well. That's MirandaMarquette.com. Got a question, comment, or topic you'd like to suggest? Tell us about it. You can email us at hello@MoneyTalksNews.com. That's hello@MoneyTalksNews.com. And one last thing, if you appreciate what we do, do something for us. Subscribe to this podcast. It takes you 2 seconds. Really helps us. So if you like us, show us and subscribe. I'm Stacy Johnson.
And I'm Miranda Marquette.
And I'm Aaron Freeman.
Hey, thanks for hanging out with us, guys. We're going to see you right here next time.